Tanks attacking by themselves, highly vulnerable. Infantry attacking by themselves, highly vulnerable. Artillery just rolling around without any other support, highly vulnerable. It's all about the combined arms team. If we don't build that thing correctly, whatever arm is left, frankly, it's going to die.
Hi, I'm Captain Adam Morton with the Canadian Army Podcast. Wherever the infantry is, there's almost always their fireteam partner, the Armored Corps. They bring a variety of weapons and protection, usually in the form of vehicles, and while tanks are great, there's a lot more to the Armored Corps. Here with me today is Colonel Fraser Auld, who is the director of the Royal Canadian Armored Corps, and he's going to lay it all down for us. Welcome to the podcast, sir.
Thanks very much. Greatly appreciate the opportunity.
So we've already talked about tanks a fair amount on the podcast, but modern armor is more than just tanks. What does the Armored Corps in general bring to the table in the battlefield?
So I think if you look back in history, and I'll start in the past and bring us forward to the present.
Yeah.
There's always been a requirement, and military commanders have always realized that they need a force that is able to move rapidly across the ground. So of course, if you look back several thousand years, this was generally folks who are on horses. This is typically what you would call cavalry. And so cavalry forces have been around for a long time, and their key attribute that they bring to battle is the ability to move quickly across ground. And so if you fast forward that to kind of the 20th century, due to some of the industrialization issues, increasing weapon lethality, the introduction of the machine gun, rapid firing artillery, you end up in this space where you still need to be able to move rapidly across the ground, except these forces are now much more vulnerable to some of these new weapon systems. And so, of course, there's an operational problem that presents itself in World War I, which is how do we break the stalemate? How do we move over machine gun swept terrain in a way where you're protected? And horse-mounted cavalry of old, it just doesn't fit the bill anymore. We still want to move quickly, but we need to do it in a protected fashion. And so, of course, you begin to see all armies beginning to experiment with novel ways of combining newly introduced engines,
right,
with this idea of armor plating. And you begin seeing the kind of introduction of some of these tanks, which was just a code word to kind of cover up the production of these vehicles. But you get this idea of protected mobility, something that can move, not rapidly at that time, but move across the terrain in a protected fashion. And so you bring that right forward to today where, you know, we have much better engine technology, we have much better designs. We have armored forces that can move very quickly across very lethal terrain under protection. And that's really what armored forces bring, the ability to move quickly in a protected fashion. And because of the platforms, you can also put a lot of firepower onto that platform. So you end up with a force that combines mobility with firepower, with protection. And a force like this that can move quickly across terrain, exploit openings when they happen, put pressure where we need it, that's something that armor brings to the battlefield, regardless of platform. That's really the core function, is the ability to be agile, move rapidly, and take advantage of opportunity.
It's interesting when you're talking about the cavalry. In my mind, I immediately thought of like the different formats of cavalry of old. Like, you know, you have horse archers, which are fast, maneuverable, have good range of fire. You have like heavily armored cavalry, you know, mounted knights that are charging down. And you have all of these formats. How does that exist in the modern battle space?
Yeah. And so what you ended up with at the core of all those different forms of cavalry that you mentioned, at the core is still this idea of moving rapidly, like regardless of whether you're an archer on horseback, you were heavily armored or lightly armored on horseback, still at the core was this idea of mobility, rapid mobility. And so today we still maintain that, you know, if you look across the armored forces of the world, many forces organize themselves along kind of light armored cavalry lines, medium armored cavalry lines, and heavy armored cavalry lines. And within the Royal Canadian Armored Corps, we are putting kind of the finishing stages on new doctrine that also begins to see us categorize our armored forces into these light armored cavalry, medium armored cavalry, and heavy armored cavalry categories. And each of those forces, they bring different things to the battlefield. They're optimized in different ways and optimized for different roles on the battlefield. But without question, they all have a utility on the battlefield.
Would you often see the heavy, medium, and light platforms deployed at the same time in terms of battlefield geometry doing the thing together, or how do they work together, if at all?
Yeah, so the army in the field, whether it's a division, choose the formation size you'd like, whether it's a corps, division, brigade, that formation is essentially an organism that has to be able to survive, fight, live on the battlefield. And it comprises of different pieces, and it needs all those pieces in order to kind of survive and fight. And the Armored Corps actually provides a couple of those pieces. So if we took a look at a brigade is roughly, we'll call it 5,000, 6,000, just to put a number on it, comprises largely of, there will be infantry, there will be artillery, and the infantry really focus on the close fight. Supporting the infantry is heavy armor cavalry, which are optimized for that close fight. But on the outskirts of the brigade, further out front, further on the flanks, there's the medium and lighter armor cavalry, which have more mobility, and their job really is to find the enemy and shape the enemy for the main body of the brigade. So within the brigade, when its job is to close with and destroy something, it will use its armor battle group, it will use its infantry battle groups to do that. But before it can do that, it needs something out there finding the enemy. And that's another thing that the Armor Corps brings to the army, is we're the ones from a ground perspective, a ground force perspective, we are the ones that are out front of the brigades and divisions, finding the enemy, shaping the enemy, and setting the conditions such that the main body of the brigade or division can actually close in and conduct their assaults on those enemy positions and achieve the objectives or the missions that they've been assigned. So we don't just have a singular role. We have multiple roles within a formation. So to your question, to circle back to that, on the battlefield, you'd actually see multiple types of armored cavalry at the same time, but fulfilling different functions and different roles and in different spaces on the battlefield. Heavy armor cavalry, which would be optimized for the close fight. And then on the outskirts, leading out front, you'd see the medium and lighter armored cavalry, which is out there trying to find the enemy, shape the enemy, find routes, find bridges, find things that that main body of the division of the brigade needs to keep moving. So the Armored Corps provides that as well. Forces out front, as well as forces within the main body that are optimized for close fighting.
You know, in my mind, when I think about shaping the enemy, it's really, the battlefield is a fog of war. You don't know what's in there. You don't know what's happening. And so when you talk about shaping the enemy, to me what that means is having pieces out there that are detecting that and trying to figure out what's happening so that you have a general idea of what's happening there. Does that sound right?
So what I would say is that fits more into finding. So we have several key functions that have to happen on the battlefield. One of them is finding. We definitely have to find where the enemy is. And so we need a force that does that. And most armies, ours included, the way the doctrine works is the Armor Corps provides the force forward that is actually finding the enemy. So that's a role. But once you've found the enemy, what you need to be able to do is fix them and hold them in place so that the main body can then close in with them. But additionally, you're not just trying to hold them in place, you're trying to shape them or set conditions, attrit them, cause them to move in a way you need to so that you can have an advantage as the main body closes in to conduct the assault or go around them or whatever your mission is. You need to shape that enemy that you found such that you can actually achieve your mission or win. And so sometimes simply smashing into them is not good enough. You may need to cut down the ratio of their forces. You may need to force them to move. That's how you may need to shape them, get them to move somewhere such that you have an advantage to close in and destroy them. And so shaping, you know, it's a term we throw around a lot. It really just means setting the right conditions so that you can win. And most of the time, the enemy is not going to cooperate with you. The enemy has a vote. And so finding them is hard. And then shaping them so that you can beat them, that is also hard. That is a deliberate action to shape them. And then actually getting into them and defeating them, that is also hard. You know, everything on the battlefield looks simple, but it's all hard. And that includes finding, fixing and shaping, and then ultimately closing with and destroying. All of those stages have to happen. They all need a force that does that. And they're all difficult because the enemy gets a vote.
One of the many things I've learned about being in the military is you notice that different countries do things ever so slightly differently, or in some cases, a lot differently. how is the Armored Corps organized in Canada?
So one of the biggest kind of, I'll call it an evolution within the Armored Corps that we have ongoing right now is we're moving from what used to be a symmetric corps. So we have three regular force regiments and we have 18 reserve regiments within the Armored Corps. In total, just a little bit more than 5,000 positions, all of which are not filled. And our regular force regiments, at least for most of my history in the Army, have been very symmetric. They all looked the same. But currently, we're working to centralize all our heavy armor under one single regiment. And our other two regular force regiments are beginning to optimize more in the medium armored cavalry and light armored cavalry spaces. So that is one thing that we are beginning to do, move to a non-symmetric corps that other allies have also done. Their armored corps or their armored branch, if you look across it, is not identical. The components of their armor branch are optimized to fulfill specific roles on the battlefield. So we are kind of moving now in that direction, which is the right thing for us to do. And it also happens to be the thing that kind of our key allies and partners have already done, actually.
I would say that mirrors to an extent for those that are familiar with the infantry structure is at the brigade level, like you have, let's say, 1, 2, 3 PPCLI. Well, 3 is more of jump capability, and then 2 has different roles, and sometimes 1 has different roles depending on how that's coordinated. So now we're just doing that within a core level reorganization.
Essentially, that's right. And there's many benefits to it. First of all, putting all the heavy platforms. So the heavy armored cavalry in Canada is centered on the Leopard 2 family of vehicles, the Leopard 2 tank. The Leopard 2s, maintaining them, making sure that they're in a running order, they're ready for training, they're ready for deployment. It is a major effort to keep those platforms ready to go. By centralizing them all, and they're being centralized in the West under the Lord Strathcona's Horse Royal Canadians, a regiment in Edmonton, by centralizing the Leopards within that regiment, it allows us also to kind of pool and focus maintenance support, all the sustainment that's required to keep those vehicles running. It also allows us to focus if we needed contracted support or support from manufacturers. It gives a real focus to that to make sure that we can have the best fleet of functioning tanks as possible. And that is underway now, and it will take us a couple of years to accomplish that. But ultimately, the Army made the decision last year that those tanks would be centralized. And over time, we have to adjust the organization and structure of the Strathconas a little bit, because a regiment that is fully based on tank needs a specific kind of maintenance footprint, a specific sustainment footprint, which is a little bit different than the other two regular force regiments that are kind of on medium or lighter vehicles. And so that work is ongoing right now to make sure that the Strathconas are set up with all the heavy platforms that we have. And as well, we're working to make sure that the Royal Canadian Dragoons in Petawawa and the Deuxième in Valcartier, the two regular force regiments that are more medium and light, to make sure that their structures are looked at and their equipment is looked at so that they are best suited to perform kind of a medium armored cavalry or light armored cavalry role on the battlefield. So the Armored Corps is going to be not symmetric, but that is purposeful, and I think it will suit the Army well.
And when we discuss that the heavy platforms is tanks, obviously, for us, what are the medium and light platforms?
So for us right now, the primary medium/light platforms, and you know, there's a debate around this, but we have LAV-6, which is also, you know, very heavily resonant across the Army and the infantry battalions and other units. But we have a combination of LAV-6, TAP-V, which is the tactical armored patrol vehicle. We still have some Coyote that are out there, which is a LAV-2 8x8 platform. They're at the end of their life and they're slowly being kind of divested over time. Mm-hmm. But those are the two main platforms, kind of LAV-6, TAP-V. There's a number of support vehicles as well, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
We have G-wagons and a variety of trucks and kitchens and things like this, fuel trucks. And, you know, the Armored Corps is a very platform-focused corps. We work to fight mounted. That's what we bring to the Army, you know, the ability to move rapidly, agile. We fight mounted. And so we need platforms. And there are always platform challenges, but I think that there are some moves underway between centralizing the Leopards with the Strathconas, along with some possible future initiatives that will see the Armored Corps, our platform fleet, kind of getting healthier and healthier as we go forward. which is something we need in the Armor Corps, again, as a very platform-based corps for the Army.
You know, you're talking about the kind of platform-based approach in the LAVs in particular. Like, I had a chance to spend a lot of time in a LAV. I got to drive a LAV. And mechanized infantry operations is a unique experience that make you sometimes feel like basically armored, right? If the armored corps is operating in LAVs and the infantry is operating in LAVs, what's the difference between those two things?
Yeah, so the platform does not define the battlefield function, you know. And the reality is that the infantry's core job is to fight dismounted. Some armies out there have armored infantry. Mm-hmm. Some forces out there just call them mechanized infantry. The reality is at the core of the infantry's function, it is to fight dismounted, close with and destroy dismounted. The infantry is the only force that is optimized to do that. Armor, we fight mounted. We have to shape the environment, set the conditions so that the infantry can actually make it to the objective, dismount, and do what they're supposed to do, which is fight dismounted. And most of the evidence out there shows kind of infantry alone can't fire their way onto an objective. It's all about the combined arms team. But I do find that some people get distracted by the fact that, well, we have the same platform as you. Yes, but you focus on different roles on the battlefield. And it's the role and function on the battlefield that matters, not the platform. You need a platform for the infantry. The Armor Corps needs a platform. The artillery need platforms. This is the way it works. But we all fulfill mutually supporting roles. And in fact, some of the images, some of the lessons, observations from what we see in Russia's war against Ukraine, if any side is unable to conduct combined arms properly, whatever arm that is just hanging out there by itself is highly vulnerable. Tanks attacking by themselves, highly vulnerable. Infantry attacking by themselves, highly vulnerable. Artillery just rolling around without any other support, highly vulnerable. It's all about the combined arms team. If we don't build that thing correctly, whatever arm is left is, frankly, it's going to die. And so the modern battlefield is way too lethal. Weapons are way too precise. The combined arms team is the answer. And so we have to focus on, and of course, these are my opinions. We have to build the army to be balanced so that we have a lethal combined arms team. That's the goal. That's the key, in my opinion.
You know, maintenance on armored vehicles is intensive, takes a lot of time, takes a lot of effort and a lot of resources. What does the Armored Corps look like for a reservist, generally speaking?
Yeah, and that's really a great question. So within the Army, of course, there's a one Army approach. You know, the intent is a very integrated force between the regular force and the reserve force. That is mirrored within the Armored Corps. We have a one Corps approach. And the way that we think about this kind of conceptually is that the regular components of the Armor Corps or the reserve components of the Armor Corps, we should be able to work together. So we could see regular folks moving to support reserve. We could see reserve folks moving to support regular regiments. And so the idea is to have this very integrated corps. The challenge becomes, as you brought up, within the vehicle space. You know, so when we start talking about vehicles for the reserves, a lot of our platforms in the Armor Corps are maintenance intensive. Some of them require special tools, require special facilities to maintain, which frankly are just not available at all locations across Canada. So could we have Leopard 2 reserve regiments? It would be difficult because of the weight of the platforms, the requirements for maintenance and special tooling, etc. However, with that said, the idea within the Armor Corps is to ensure that the reserve force, they have access to platforms that are more easily maintainable for them and are more easy to train with, given the realities of kind of reserve life, reserve access to training areas, reserve access to maintenance. I don't think it's something that we've completely cracked yet, and it's something that we continue to work on, frankly, is finding a good solution for armored reserve regiments. The reserve regiments are very energized in this. They're doing great work to figure out how do they best partner with local regular force regiments. As an example, some of the Toronto area units have great relationships with the Dragoons up in Petawawa,
right.
Or some of the Western reserve regiments have great relationships with the Strathconas out in Edmonton, et cetera.
Right.
And so by establishing these relationships as well between reserve regiments and regular force regiments, they're able to piggyback on each other's training opportunities. So you do see reserve units, providing crews, providing possibly troops, etc., into regular force regiment exercises. You see regular force folks supporting reserve regiment exercises. And so life as a reservist within the Armor Corps, it can be challenging to get access to the platforms that you would like to have access to, but there's definitely work afoot to make that more available, make sure that the training that can happen is happening. But I don't think we've fully cracked that yet. It's something that we have more work to do, not just us, but within the Army, we have to do more work on that.
And I would guess also when you're building core skills, those core skills are transferable to a certain extent across multiple platforms. And it's just like, let's say, weapon systems in the infantry or whatever it is, you may not know everything about another weapon system, but if you have the basic functions of how to load, unload a weapon, make it safe, understand that those are the steps that you have to do with any weapon system, I'd imagine that transfers very well in the armored department in terms of even things so much as tactics and things like that.
Yeah. And so that's what the reserves focus on really is. There are not just basic Army skills, but basic Armor Corps skills, living and fighting as a crew, map and compass skills, controlling fires. There are many basic skills that reserve regiments continue to focus on, such that when they go off to train, either their own training or they integrate with regular force training, like you said, those core skills are completely transferable. And to be honest, the Army is pivoting towards Latvia heavily, and the reserves are going to be a critical component, not just for the Army, but within the Armor Corps, to make sure that the Army can deliver on the requirements for Latvia. And so these core skills that the reserve regiments focus on make them easily integrated within these rotations. So our reserves, their training program, their qualifications, all of those pathways are the same as the regular force for us.
Mm-hmm.
The tactics the reserves use are the same tactics the regular forces use. And so by having this kind of one core approach through training, through core skills, battle test standards, it makes us very integrated, regular to reserve, reserve to regular. It really does help us with the one core approach.
And what are the expectations for that upcoming deployment? Like what is the Armored Corps going to be providing to the team in Latvia?
So the Armor Corps actually has to force generate for every rotation going to Latvia. So every single rotation, the Strathconas will have to generate half a squadron for the heavy armor cavalry squadron that is in Latvia. And the way it actually is working now is every rotation that will go out the door for the first few rotations will be essentially a half squadron size. And so that's roughly, we'll call it 60 soldiers, 65 soldiers from the Strathconas. Every single rotation will have to rotate into Latvia because there are Leopard 2s in Latvia. And so every rotation needs a fresh wave of Leopard 2 qualified members of the Armor Corps. Additionally, there's also a cavalry squadron in Latvia as part of the commitment. And this is more in the medium light role. So what that means is every rotation, either the Dragoons in Petawawa or the Duziem in Velkarche, they will also have to generate around 60, 65 folks to head over to Latvia. And so every single rotation to Latvia, the Armor Corps will be generating forces to land in two spots in Latvia, either heavy armor cavalry or the medium slash light role. And so it will be demanding. We will be drawing heavily on our armor reserve units to support this, because this commitment is expected, obviously, to last for many years.
Yeah.
And so every rotation, the Armor Corps is implicated in Latvia. We have people in the Army who want to operate. We don't want to just be sitting in garrison. We want to be in the field soldiering. Soldiering's hard business. We need people ready to operate because the Army is about to go into a period of high tempo and constant operations, and we're going to feel that within the Armor Corps.
Check your kit. You know, to the untrained eye, I think a lot of people may not notice that there's been some evolution in, let's say, armored vehicles, even the difference between, let's say, a LAV 2.5 Coyote and the LAV 6 platform. You know, from an outsider looking in perspective, you might just be like, yeah, big wheels, big gun. What has evolved in terms of these platforms over the past couple of decades?
First of all, I'll say, you know, I've made reference to heavy armored cavalry, medium armored cavalry, light armored cavalry. The one thing I would throw out there is the word heavy, medium, and light, that is not specifically about physical weight. Okay, that refers to the role that that particular force is optimized for. And within history, within our world, there's an accepted idea of this thing called the Iron Triangle. You end up, when you're designing forces or you're buying platforms, you're trying to balance mobility, firepower, and protection. Because whenever you kind of overweight one of those, you usually have to give up on one or the other. And so it's a constant battle to weight those and balance those. And so if you were to look at heavy armored cavalry, this is kind of a force that is optimized more for close combat, the close fight. Hence, it would have a heavier weighting more on firepower and protection. And so you'd have to give up a little bit on the mobility side.
Right.
Whereas if you look on the other end of the kind of armored cavalry spectrum and go to a light armored cavalry force, this is a force that would be optimized more for wide-ranging movements and maneuver, maybe on a flank, operations on a flank or rear area. So you're able to reduce the amount of firepower, reduce the protection, but enhance the mobility piece. And so, you know, you look to optimize your forces based on the role that you see them playing on the battlefield. The reason I throw all that out there is what we're seeing in terms of the evolution of armored vehicles is this idea of trying to manage the Iron Triangle to make vehicles, as an example, more lethal. So greater firepower, greater protection, greater mobility, but lighter physical weight.
Mm-hmm.
So you would end up with a vehicle that would still be optimized for close combat. So it would still be a heavy armored cavalry vehicle, but the physical weight of it might be half the weight of today's vehicles. And so there's armies out there and there's manufacturers out there that is their design challenge. Like, I want a vehicle that is better protected, more firepower, and can move better than today's tanks, but I want it to weigh less than 50 tons. And so people are going after that with new armor technologies, different gun systems and ammunition systems, better engine technologies, including active protection systems. Mm-hmm. Instead of just typically armor is thought of, well, I need more protection. Let's just make the armor thicker, which then just makes the vehicle physically heavier.
Yeah, thick metal.
Ends up, you know, you can't fly it anywhere. It can only go on a ship. It takes forever to get anywhere. You can't maintain it. We're going to see what is considered a heavy vehicle optimized for close combat, the physical weight's coming down. And you're going to see what is considered a light vehicle, still light, but you'll see their firepower is kind of coming up. And so my point with all this is where the future of armored vehicles are. The future of armor vehicles is also in optional crewing. So a lot of the armor vehicle developments that we're seeing, it is a vehicle that perhaps has a two-person crew, or you don't have to have a crew and it can be remotely controlled or it can be automated. So we're beginning to see this kind of collaborative combat approach where you have uncrewed vehicles, whether they're in the air or on the ground, you have uncrewed vehicles, several of them that are controlled by a crewed vehicle, and this little grouping forms a little combat grouping on the ground. And sometimes you can also have that crewed vehicle not being crewed, something further back controlling it. So there's a lot of movement towards not just uncrewed and automated platforms, both in the air and on the ground, but also optionally crewed platforms. So the idea of kind of remote control hover tanks or something like this, you know, it used to be really science fiction. There are companies out there, there are prototypes out there of uncrewed, remotely controlled, automated systems that can fight on the ground. Are they perfect? Not yet, but they're in development. They're working towards them. You can find them open source on the internet. There's a lot of very incredible kind of developments in the armor vehicle space, not just for the armor corps, but for the infantry. Infantry fighting vehicles are undergoing an evolution. Artillery platforms are undergoing an evolution. But ultimately, there's a lot of exciting development in that space, and we want to be part of it.
As you're describing kind of that development and the Iron Triangle aspect, a lot of military members, I would say, are familiar with the scene in the movie Pentagon Wars, where we're talking about the development of the Bradley infantry fighting vehicle. And the iterative design process of adding features and in a really challenging way, let's say. If you haven't seen it, you got to look up the clip. It's pretty entertaining. And I know we've come a long way in facing those problems sometimes, but other times not so much.
Yeah, I know. And so, you know, when the U.S. was developing the Big Five in the 80s or finalizing the Big Five, the Bradley was one of them. Some of those lessons are being used to improve the way things are evolving today. So one of the big terms is this idea of new platforms have to be future-proofed.
Yeah.
they can't be expected to be perfect platforms right off the line. They have to be built in a way that as we learn or as some new technology, you can rapidly just upgrade the platform without requiring a complete redesign. So even the way these vehicles, these future platforms are being created, it's being done to make them more adaptable. As we learn and new things are discovered, you can rapidly upgrade your platforms.
We've seen that with the Lav 3, actually. Even while I was in theater, variants were coming in that were heavily upgraded from the way they were previously.
Yeah, and that's the way that we'll go. And for whatever it's worth on my side, what I try to influence is, you know, we don't need the perfect solutions. What we need to do is get to good enough, snap the chalk line, get it moving forward, and then we can improve these things over time by upgrading modules, changing out this, changing out that, making it better as we learn. But if we just keep waiting to design a perfect solution, you'll never end.
Yeah,
you know, technology is just changing way too quickly. We need to move forward with something.
Perhaps to wrap things up, what is one of those things for the Armored Core that your average person outside would not know what that thing is, or, you know, that secret, let's call it?
That's a good question. And there'll probably be people that want to debate with me about this, but...
always.
So, you know, the reality is within the Armored Core, not everybody can do it. When you're trying to crew command a vehicle or you're part of that vehicle crew, there's a lot of inputs. You know, you're trying to watch where is the enemy? Where are the just physical dangers, cliffs and potholes and swamps? What is my crew doing? Where are my fire team partners? Where's the combat team? Where is the battle group? You're trying to do all of that while also navigating off a map, screaming fire orders at your crew or giving direction to the driver. All of that is happening simultaneously. There's a lot that you have to do all at the same time. So for folks in the Armored Core, a real strength is the ability to multitask and do these things quickly because you're moving across the ground very quickly. The situation in front of you is changing very quickly. They have to think fast, multitask quickly, understand what the heck's going on really quickly. And our people do that very well. And so, you know, the Armored Core, it has its challenges right now. We're working through some of them with respect to platform availability and other things like this. This is no surprise to anybody. We do have a way to move this forward and we're getting after it. But the Armored Core is definitely a great place to be. It plays an important role on the battlefield. And without question, we need good people coming into the Core, ready to work, ready to operate, and ready to help us through the demands of the next decade as we service every single rotation to Latvia. We need people with their bags packed and ready to go.
Well, I guess if there's any takeaway, that's it, is if you want some action in the Armored Core, it's happening.
I'm ready to go. Like, I've got my bags packed just in case I get called. Let's go.
Nice. I love it. Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
That was Colonel Fraser Old, Director of the Royal Canadian Armored Corps, and I'm Captain Adam Orton for the Canadian Army Podcast. Orton out.